Hello, a very good day to you all, and welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga, the English-speaking Spanish football podcast, bringing you the latest news and views from around the beautiful game, and of course, around La Liga. I'm Ollie Wilson, your host, once again being joined by two of the finest footballing minds that Marca has to offer. Delighted to say, coming back to the show once again, a man who I thoroughly enjoyed chatting football with, Mr. Simon the Brand Harrison, or Simon... the sickly Harrison, as he's going to be known today, I think. How you doing, mate?
Well, hopefully I've not got too much of a frog in my throat, but I've been getting to a lot of games this weekend, plenty to talk about, plenty of managers, I think, to kind of moan about too, so that might be interesting. But yeah, it's a pleasure to be back on.
Always good to chat Spanish football with you, mate. And yeah, sounding all loud and clear on this end, man. Don't you worry. A new guest on the show today as well, from the depths of Marca, brought up from the basement to join us on the podcast today in the bright sunshine of Eye on La Liga. It's Mr. Tim Hanlon joining us on the show. Tim, how you doing, mate? Welcome to the show.
Cheers. Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm doing very well, thanks. Yeah, I've been keeping a close eye as usual on La Liga and what's been going on, and I think Valencia is particularly interesting at the moment, isn't it? How they've started off so well. So many people have been criticising them over the last few seasons, and yet they've really got off to a really good start this season.
Yeah, it's been a continuing topic on Eye on La Liga over the last few weeks, and it's probably the best place to start, really, over the weekend's action, because it was an emphatic 4-0 victory over a Sevilla side that are really trying to kickstart their season and try and hang with the top four once again this year. But Valencia are just continuing to perhaps not decimate all in their path, but they're keeping a close eye on Barcelona, just 4 points off them now, still sat in second at the end of the La Liga weekend with that comfortable victory. And I'll start with you, Tim, because you are the man really to talk all things Valencia. Are you surprised just how well this season has gone for them so far?
Well, I'd actually just throw out there that I'm not actually that surprised. I would say that if you look at what they've done over the summer, this has been very different to what's happened over the last few seasons, because they've actually shown a bit of common sense and brought the right people in, starting with the coach, Marcelino, because he knows the Spanish league. He's done very well. He's a coach who specialises in having an organised team. And if you compare that to the last few seasons, which have just been complete chaos with the wrong people who have been chosen, people who have perhaps been close to the owner, Peter Lim, and not had the right credentials for the position at all. And so, starting with the coach, he's the right man. They've got a sports director now, director of sports, Alemany, who's got experience of the Spanish league. I mean, it's crazy when you look back over what they've been doing over the last few seasons, bringing people who just didn't know what they were doing. Then you go from there to on the pitch, the signings. They've been good, solid, steady signings. Condogbia has come in and given them that solidity in the middle of the pitch, which they've been lacking. Enzo Perez was there last season. He was not doing particularly well. So generally speaking, I think that they've been a lot better organised on the pitch. There have been surprises as well, though. I mean, I've been surprised at Rodrigo. I mean, he looked like a lame duck, to be honest with you, over the last season or two. He looked like a player who was just going nowhere, but he started the season really well.
It was interesting on the weekend that one of the loanees coming in to this side this season, you talk about the new arrivals, Tim, Gonzalo Guidez coming in from Paris Saint-Germain, getting a brace. And he's somebody that featured a little bit in around PSG at the start of the season, particularly in their summer pre-season friendlies. He's been moved away to get game time. He's getting game time and thriving this weekend against Sevilla. Almost had his way with them for the whole 90 minutes in the weekend.
Yeah, no, he's come in and he's done extremely well, but it's not just him. I think that he's come into a team which is functioning, and there's other players like Carlos Soler, who I'd like to mention in particular, because I've seen him over the last season, and I think he's a top player. He's very young, but he's a player who's been linked around to other, you know, big clubs before, and he's got a lot of quality. And Guedes, like you say, I mean, there's one player who can encapsulate really what's gone really well for Valencia this season is him. He really does, you know, have a good turn of pace, quality on the ball. I mean, he's got exactly what Valencia needed. And it's a very difficult stadium. It's a difficult crowd to win over, and he's done it incredibly well.
Yeah, they do like to get on the back of players and managers and the board when they're not performing at Valencia. Simon, on this Valencia side, though, been a great start to the campaign, as I said. Even getting the best out of Simone Zaza, who continues to score goals as well this season. Is there almost a feeling, either in Spain, yourself, or do you get a feeling that there's almost a Valencia-type mishap still just around the corner, waiting to happen, and what has been a great start suddenly all comes crashing down around them?
Well, I think off the pitch, as Tim said, they've got it bang on. On the pitch, as it stands, they've got something settled, they've got something that looks very good. I think the only possible thing that could derail them would be maybe a couple of injuries in some key areas, but even then, I mean, at fullback, they've got a couple of options spare. At centre-back, they've got a few quality options to rotate. If they got injuries in midfield, they can kind of move Carlos Soler maybe in off the wing, play him central midfield. They've got the likes of Andreas Pereira to bring in, who haven't really had too much of a chance so far. So maybe some key injuries. But aside from that, it looks very, very good. I think the mood in Spain, well, in Valencia at least, the fans really believe that they're on the verge of something. I mean, leaving the game on the weekend, the fans were singing all the way home outside. There were the cameras for various TV programmes, and the fans were going absolutely crazy. I think they kind of think it's their year for maybe even a Champions League finish, and with the way that Sevilla have started, with the way that Atletico Madrid have started, it doesn't seem all too crazy. I mean, Marcelino is just going to keep playing the same way. They're just going to keep getting closer and closer to that automation that he always talks about, the way that he wants his teams to sort of play almost robotically to get forward. And with the consistency that they've shown with Rodrigo, Zaza, Santi Mina coming off the bench and scoring again, they've got goals from various different sources too. So all in all, they look like one of the better equipped sides maybe to finish in those top four places.
And a lot of discussion about Marcelino and the way he operates as well as a coach. It's interesting to see that we've seen, you know, particularly at Sevilla last season, the likes of Sao Paulo, and we do see, of course, Diego Simeone as well at Atletico Madrid, gets the best out of his teams by being fiery, by being passionate, by igniting the spirits. Marcelino not doing that at Valencia behind the scenes, apparently. Improving players via dialogue, according to Simone Zaza, perhaps the arm round the shoulder approach. A bit of close comfort for a side that kind of just needed that. It almost felt like they needed a big hug in the end, Valencia, and they're getting that from Marcelino. The way he operates is slightly different to coming in and shouting and bawling, but it's getting results. He's a cool customer.
He is, but also he is very, very demanding. I mean, even with how they went away to Betis and pulled off a very, very good result, the fact that they conceded three goals late on, I mean, he's a perfectionist. He'll still want more than that. Conceding three goals in the last 15 minutes is not something that he would ever want to happen. But definitely, it is a calm approach in terms of how he thinks the game should be played. All the players know what's expected of them. They know it's not going to be changing anytime soon. And I think, really, given that there's a good homegrown core to this side, you know, you've got the likes of Gaia, you've got the likes of Soler. They know what the fans want. The fans make it very clear what the fans want. So, I mean, you do get from just Mostar in general, you get the feeling and the motivation can maybe come from the Curva Nord, who last season, the atmosphere section had a sort of fractured relationship with the club. They're looking a lot closer now. So maybe even if Marcelino, he's still demanding, he still wants the best, but they can still draw energy from the crowd too, and Mestalla was really, really rocking against Sevilla. I mean, all sides of the stadium up, chanting, singing, and it just feels momentous this season already.
Yeah, and I would just add that I would say that Mestalla does have passion. He's quite a steely character. He's certainly not someone who will allow anyone to get away with anything. So I think that gives a good basis to the team to begin with.
It's a nice run that they've got coming up as well, Valencia, in their next few games. They've got Alaves after, of course, the midweek encounter against Zaragoza in the Copa del Rey. Then they take on Leganes, who are another surprise character up in fifth spot at the moment in the La Liga table and catching a few people a little off guard. Espanyol, not a great game, obviously, against Barcelona, although at home in the Mestalla in November. Zaragoza again in the Copa del Rey. And then into December, Getafe, Celta Vigo, Eibar, and finishing up 2017 with Villarreal. there are a lot of winnable games in there, Tim, for them.
That's right. I mean, they just need to keep going. I mean, I'm not sure how far they can progress this season. I think a Champions League spot would be a fantastic achievement for them. I'm still question marks over whether they can do that, whether they've got the firepower. Rodrigo's started well, Zaza, but I mean they're not really top players in my view. I know Rodrigo's back in the Spain squad, but I don't think they can match really with the firepower, even though they're not delivering at the moment at maybe the other clubs, but I don't think they really match up. So I think that they just need to sort of keep on the road they're going, which is well. And you know, you were saying earlier about where can it go wrong for them. Well, I think that if they do start getting a few not so great results, then the crowd are can be difficult, very passionate, and so they could turn on them, and then they could start going nasty again.
Football fans are fickle, Tim. I've never heard such a ludicrous comment.
Yeah, but and if there's one club where they're the most fickle, then that's Mestalla. I mean, they do get behind their team, though. I've been quite impressed with that aspect, that they are very supportive of the team when they're going well. That was an aspect which I wasn't quite expecting so much when I've seen them recently at the Mestalla. But they are very critical when things don't go well as well. That's the problem.
They still have conceded more goals than anybody else in the top five in La Liga. Valencia, 10 goals conceded this season. Did get a clean sheet on the weekend against Sevilla. And just quickly, Simon, on Sevilla, it's a side that continues to just disappoint, doesn't it, under Burrito this season?
Yeah, massively. I mean, after say, 6 games or so, they're actually sitting up in second place. It looks very good on paper, but in practice, they've been just very, very poor. I mean, I don't think that Burrito, it's not as if we're a few games into the season. This is now 9 La Liga match days gone. I don't think he knows his best 11. I don't think necessarily we've seen them play in the way that he wants them to be playing. It's just jumbled, and they've got a lot of players that are lacking in confidence. Luis Muriel at Mestalla, I think they honestly could have left him there for a week, and I don't think he would have found the back of the net with no one on the pitch. He's just playing in such a way where you just wonder where they're going to get the goals to come from, because they've got a lot of great talent. I mean, you look at them on paper and you think that this is a team where, you know, they should be able to maintain the same kind of momentum that they had under Sampaoli. I mean, not a great deal on the pitch has really changed. But the way they were playing, I mean, Nzonzi being injured was a big factor, I think. The fact that Guido Pizarro, he's come in and he's a shadow of the player that Nzonzi is. But it's just the confidence issue and the fact that it's so much chopping and changing, there's no consistency. You've got players like Ever Banega that are forced to pick up the ball so deep that they can't have the influence and the impact that they need to be having in the final third of the pitch. And all in all, I mean, Burrito, the pressure's just cranking up more and more, because before, within the first, I don't know, 6 games of the season, he kind of had the points tally to hide behind, but now everything's getting stripped back. They've dropped down into 8th, and it's looking, I mean, they lost to Athletic Club, and Athletic Club have been really poor this season too. So all in all, it's just looking dreadful for Sevilla.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, Burrito's a good coach. He's done very well before. He likes to play a good attacking style of football under the style of Bielsa. He's seen as Bielsa is his kind of mentor figure. But there's a lot of new players there, and he's new himself, and it's just not come together yet. I personally think he just needs to be given time, and they'll sort it out. But players like Banega, for example, he's not delivered. He's not linking up particularly well. He's obviously a very good player, very creative player, but he's not delivering. They've spent money as well at Sevilla, and so that's part of the reason for the frustration, because it's just not coming together. Muriel, another one, who's a talented player with pace, but he's not showing that at the moment at all. But, you know, against Valencia, they were really poor.
Simon, you just said that Sevilla perhaps aren't playing how Burrito wants them to play. How do you think he does want them to play then?
Well, for me, I found that just his Celta side, obviously they went a long way in the Europa League last season, and I think that team, I mean, Johnny at left back isn't so much keen to get forward, but at right back, you know, that they had Hugo Mayo bombing down the right hand side. I don't really think that how he's been having Sevilla playing really, really lends itself. I mean, playing Gabriel Mercado, who I would really see as a bit more of a centre half, he's playing at right back. It's not really giving them really much width at the back. I think it's more the fact that there's just some vital sort of attributes that are missing within. I think this group are capable of playing the way that he would like to play, and obviously with there being a lot of, you know, interplay and a lot of positive passes in between the lines in the final third. But I think at the back they're looking very, very short on pace. I think Simon Kjær and Longley, I mean, Longley picked up an injury at Mostar quite early on, and then he was struggling. He went down a couple of times and eventually came off. They're lacking pace at the back in a major way, I think, and that's somewhere where they're going to keep getting caught out time and time again. As long as Nzonzi's out, I don't think they've really got a player that they can sort of base their midfield upon. I thought Guido Pizarro, he was dropping very, very deep in between the centre-backs to collect the ball off Sergio Rico. But it was, to begin with, Marcelino was quite happy for Dani Parejo to press on and basically push it with the strikers to make a sort of front three to press against Sevilla's back four. But it kind of got to the point where I think he let Dani Parejo come back in just because giving the ball to Guido Pizarro seemed to be turning out far better than, you know, forcing Sevilla to go long. So I just think that they're lacking some pace at the back in a major, major way. And then I would really just be thinking that probably Michael Crandelli would be a bit more suited to playing rather than Guido Pizarro, because while Pizarro, he's got things to give. I mean, he's got some physicality. He's quite confident actually at carrying the ball. But as the deepest man in Nzonzi's place, I think he just looked like a big sore thumb, to be honest, in this Sevilla team.
Who would have thought that on Ion La Liga we'd spend the first 17 minutes or so dedicated to Valencia and Sevilla? It was a big encounter, of course, this weekend, but we have completely ignored the big three in Spain for the moment. That will be no longer the case, though. Let's drop into Sunday's action with Real Madrid and their convincing victory against Eibar. 3-0 on the score sheet, but Tim, you didn't actually think it was as convincing as the score would suggest, and there's a few other bits around Madrid that need to be discussed, including a Twitter spat that Gary Lineker seems to have thrown his name in the hat, slagging off Karim Benzema as well. There's plenty still going on around Los Blancos, but important to get at least a victory and a second one on home soil in La Liga this season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for Zidane, the victory was vital, really, with our home form this season being poor, and to avoid the pressure growing on him. But of course, at Madrid, they won a lot more than just the result. And the fact was that this was a game where they didn't play particularly well. They showed. The finishing touch, though, they got the goals. You know, the first one was an own goal, but they showed kind of supreme efficiency, really, because their play wasn't that great. Eibar were solid. They concentrated on defending, as you'd expect, going to the Bernabeu. But an interesting statistic was that Madrid had their lowest number of shots in La Liga this season, with just 15, and you'd expect them to be doing a lot better than that against Eibar, wouldn't you, really? So yeah, key players not really performing. Ronaldo, I mean, he's had a bit of a funny start to the season, hasn't he, really, with his suspension at the beginning, and he's not really clicked into gear in La Liga. He scored a few goals in the Champions League, but I think he's just got one, is it, in La Liga, so he's not he's not doing so well. You've got Bale, who's been injured. Benzema, he's had a lot of criticism, like you were saying, with the Lineker tweets. So there we go.
Yeah, it was just the one goal in La Liga for Cristiano Ronaldo at the moment. That came against Getafe last week before the victory this weekend against Eibar. Of course, we are at the point of the season as well where every single week somebody is going to say, somebody in a Los Blancos shirt is going to say, Ronaldo deserves to win the Ballon d'Or, I mean, or FIFA's the best award. And it's just, you know, this is the tedious part of the season where Spain is dominated by Ronaldo versus Messi again. He hasn't had a great start to the season. And Madrid starting with he and Asensio this weekend as the front two, Benzema out on the bench to start the game this weekend. It's not an intimidating front two that really, despite Asensio's great start to the season, scored a couple of absolute beauties, of course, against Barcelona in the Spanish Super Cup. But when you see Ronaldo in the form he's in and Asensio lining up on the team sheet as your front two, you're more worried about Isco sat behind them more than anything else.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I think they did so well in the Super Cup that, yeah, this expectation was really growing. At the same time, they, you know, Barcelona struggled, and so there was this kind of expectation that Madrid would just hit the La Liga running and would take teams by storm. And Asensio was like at the front of that, having done so well. But you've got to be realistic about a young kid coming through, and he's got all the talent in the world, there's no doubt. But he's going to have ups and downs along the way, isn't he? He's not playing badly. He's just not blitzing teams. You know, I think that's the only issue really. And then the players around him though are just not quite firing as you'd expect.
Simon, what about the pressure on Zinedine Zidane? We always kind of seem to think it's a little unfair, considering all the success he's had in such an early, short tenure at Real Madrid at the moment. But under pressure, nevertheless, after this slightly sloppy start to the season. And interesting in his post-match comments saying that it was a good win. He was happy with the 3-0 win against Eibar. But, and a big but, we could have done better. Do you think he has higher expectations for his side and maybe perhaps feels a little let down by the players and their performances so far this season? Or should he be taking a fair bit of the blame for some of the changes and tactical decisions he's made this year?
To be honest, I'd only really say, in terms of what he's done, maybe he could have pushed a bit harder to bring in somebody once Alvaro Morata and Mariano Diaz had both left the club in the summer. I think maybe that could be the only criticism that you could really level, is that having Borja Mayoral as that sort of third option up top behind Benzema and Ronaldo, obviously that's not ideal. But aside from that, I mean, Real Madrid, they've kind of just been stuttering, but they're still winning games. Danny Ceballos, I thought, looked good. Obviously there were some question marks over Asensio coming into this game, having played, I think it was just over 500 minutes or so without a goal. But this was never going to be a game that would really suit Real Madrid down to the ground. I mean, when you've got a player, for example, such as Marco Asensio going forward, if he could play on the counter-attack, or if he had some space to drive into, you'd be looking at him as a much more dangerous option. And really, Eibar, they've come here, and recently, in the last few games, they've been playing around with this five at the back. And obviously, all of this is based around being hard to play through, having three central midfielders. I mean, Rivera and Escalante, Rivera likes to sit quite deep, and Escalante likes to destroy play. So really, Real Madrid knew what they were getting into, and it was going to be that Eibar were going to sit back, stay congested, be tough to play through, and hopefully sort of stifle the likes of Isco, stifle the likes of Dani Ceballos. But thankfully, you know, an early goal means that, even though it was an own goal, it means that you don't sort of tick into the second half of the game and the fans don't start to get on your back and et cetera, et cetera. So really, given how they've been going at the Bernabeu this season and the fact that they've, you know, dropped points in a few notable games already, it's just good to get the points on the board, because clearly they've got the talents, and clearly Zidane is the manager who is the right one to keep going with this terrific era that he's already, you know, already started, despite being so young. But yeah, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo, he'll be annoyed at himself, but Zidane, I don't think he's really got too much to worry about.
You could almost perhaps say that they did so well at the end of last season when the Champions League and started winning the Super Cups, the European domestic Super Cups, that fact, almost since could be leveled, that it worked against them, in the sense that they thought, well, we don't need to get another striker in, even though they lost Morata, for example, and perhaps that's not been the case, that they put too much trust in the youngsters, and that they did need to go for another strike. Obviously, they missed out on Mbappe. I mean, he was one they were particularly linked to, and he chose to go elsewhere. But I mean, perhaps they could have looked a little bit hard to get a more experienced player, someone to replace Morata.
Yeah, it always needs just a little freshening up, even the best of sides, just to create something. Just finally on Real Madrid, and I only ask this because he looks like a solid player, but I'm still not that convinced by him. At that left-back position, Theo Hernandez. Just, gentlemen, your thoughts, one of the new arrivals for Real Madrid this season. Do you think he looks like the real deal and can be... I mean, he's very young, of course, still. But do you think he is the kind of real deal, the French left-back? And and can be the staple left back for this Real Madrid side for kind of years to come. I've just not seen enough from him that makes me think that he's actually as good as the kind of hype that there was around bringing him in.
I think that the only question mark might be his mentality, of that he needs to work very, very hard and stay very, very focused on his football, because obviously a lot's come quite young for him. And obviously it was no small decision to decide to swap Atleti for Real Madrid either. I think he's almost a victim of the fact that he's coming in to rotate in after Marcelo, who's probably, you know, the best left back of the last decade, and he's so complete. Obviously going on a defensive side of things, he's solid, but then he makes such an impact in the final third of the pitch too. I would just kind of say that Theo Hernandez, what he's shown so far and what he showed at Alaves last season, is that he's just a real athlete. He's very, very quick. I think there was only Alvaro Odriozola and Jesse Rodriguez that were clocked at similar speeds as him last season. So he can really, really shift. But the problem is that when Real Madrid, they're playing at the Bernabeu, they're playing against a team like Eibar, who want to sit back, and they're using wing-backs, and they've got three centre-halves, and they're not leaving themselves open to be hit on the break. His speed suddenly becomes only important when chasing back towards his own goal, which isn't really something that he's going to be doing too often. So I think almost he could suffer just given the situations that he's put in. I think in a bigger game, maybe, you know, against the likes of Barcelona, against the likes of Atletico, when he gets these spaces and these opportunities to drive forward and show what he can do at pace, that's when you're going to see Theo Hernandez and think, wow, this boy's special. But when he's just asked to do the very basal things at left back, get forward occasionally, I think there was only a couple of occasions last night where he really got to open his legs up. I think, you know, that could be why he might look a little bit average at now. But, I mean, average in this Real Madrid team is nothing bad.
Yeah, I think he needs to be given a little bit of time. I mean, he came in for this season really as an understudy to Marcelo. And so I think that's the idea, really, isn't it? That he's going to be given this season to sort of bed himself in, and then we'll see what he can do. But he's a young player, but I think he's got a lot of potential there.
Well, shouting me down, you two, aren't you? thanks very much. Yeah, no, cheers for that, guys. Hang me out to dry. Let's move away from Real Madrid then as quickly as possible with my tail between my legs. And let's talk about Barcelona very quickly. We're already running out of time here on the show today. The 2-0 victory against Malaga. Little stroke of luck, though. Perhaps a big stroke of luck as well. Outcry from the Malaga players after they thought the ball had gone out of play. But play continuing. Gerard de la Feu capitalising on with the early goal to give them a 1-0 advantage. Iniesta getting a strike in the second half to give them a 2-0 victory at home. Ernesto Valverde continuing to get wins for Barcelona. A bit of good fortune is always what you need at these sorts of times. Barcelona remaining with that healthy lead at the top of the La Liga table. And it's all still going rather smoothly despite the controversy around Barca's first goal. A little lucky though on the weekend, Simon?
I think it was more unlucky on Malaga's part, because obviously the ball was clearly out, and it really just robbed Malaga of the chance to set up their stall and really pose a tough, resilient block to try and break through. Malaga have been poor this season. They've leaked a lot of goals. I mean, I remember them coming to Mestalla and getting absolutely smashed 5-0. And yet somehow, despite all of this, on paper, I mean, they don't look too bad, and they do have some redeeming qualities in there. Obviously bottom of the table, just a point to their name, but you did have the impression that if they would come to Camp Nou, they would defend, they would work very hard for Michel. Obviously it's a manager that has done very well for them last season, and I think almost they can band around him a bit more in the knowledge that they've had key players go and no one's come in really to replace them of any real reputation. But it just completely pulled the rug out from underneath Malaga. Malaga were just going to sit back. They were going to have Rolón and Adrián playing, you know, fairly reserved midfield. Diego Rolán had kind of, him and Peñaranda would be left to chase lost causes up front a little bit potentially, but they were just looking to sit back. And when you've got a player like Paul Baez at centre-back who's extremely slow, that means that they're probably going to end up playing very, very deep as well. And to concede after 2 minutes, I mean, what are you meant to do? I mean, you can keep a clean sheet, maybe you would set your first objective is to get through the first 10 minutes without conceding against Barcelona, then maybe the 20, then you can look, and if you get into the half-time break and it's 0-0, then you think, look lads, we could do something here, you know, keep it tight, you never know, we could nick one thing on the break, there could be a mistake, we could take advantage of it. But to concede after 2 minutes to a goal that was so clearly out of play, I mean, it's just completely stole their thunder.
all about that base. Not quite for Malaga, that centre-back position. Sorry, that's absolutely awful, but I'm going to leave that one in the podcast as well because I don't mind about that. Cringy indeed. Gerard Deulofeu, of course, getting the opening goal. And Tim, just your thoughts on a man who is going to be asked to play a bit part role when perhaps it looked at the start of the season like they might, Ernesto Valverde, start with that front three of Suarez, Messi and Deulofeu, especially once Dembele then went down injured and out for an extended period of time. He said that he's feeling important at Barcelona, and knowing what his character's like, that seems like that's important for him.
Yeah, I mean, he came back to Barcelona, and there are a lot of question marks when he arrived because he'd done reasonably well, perhaps at Milan. He hadn't shone at Everton overly so, and so you questioned really whether it was a progressive move for Barcelona or more of a desperate move in a generally poor climate at the club where they missed out on other signings. I think Valverde's done incredibly well so far to just make everyone feel involved. He's got he's using all his squad basically. He's trying, well, not everyone, but Turan, Alcacer's not had much of a look in, but generally speaking, he's used most of the players, and including Deulofeu, and he's given them all chances to show what they can do. And Deulofeu's kind of shone really. He's not the most talented player in the world. He's got a lot of pace, and sometimes you need that in a team. I always thought at Barcelona with Eto that he wasn't on a technical level, I don't think, of the same as a Messi, Ronaldinho, Henry, but he was more direct. And I think that in the best teams, you need a mix of different qualities. And I think that's what he can give to Barcelona this season. And so going forward, he's had a decent looking as well. Perhaps he can do even more with Suarez not really performing. He's been a big disappointment so far. He's just not clicked. I suppose you're looking at players like him and Messi are wrong side of 30 now, and they're going to not be as consistent as they were. And I think that's possibly part of the problem. And then maybe later on in the campaign, he's going to click into gear when they really need him, and the goals will come. But certainly at the moment, he's not really firing, is he?
Priceless, according to the manager, though, still Luis Suarez, despite firing blanks against Malaga. Just kind of finally on this game, because it brings us into the wider debate, of course, Deulofeu's goal about video refereeing technology in Spain. They still refuse La Liga to bring anything in. Got no goal line technology, no video review systems, although anybody that's watched Serie A this season will see the good and the ugly with the video review system. Just your thoughts on perhaps the stubbornness, gents, of La Liga not to bring in any sort of review system, any sort of technology into the officiating of football games. Are they just now living in the past slightly, La Liga, or are we happy and still enjoying the debate and the and discussion around these sorts of events, incidents, and this is still what football's all about? It doesn't ever go perfectly for everybody.
Yeah, I think that La Liga, Spain generally, are quite stubborn in these kind of things about making changes, developments. So even we had the Celta Atletico game, just on a quick point, they didn't delay the kickoff, even though lots of fans hadn't been able to get there on time, and there was a lot of criticism in the press that they could have just put the start off half an hour later, and it would have solved a lot of problems for the fans. So traditionally, you know, the Spanish football is quite it's not very progressive, a bit stubborn. And I think the general idea of video technology can be seen from two ways. I mean, it doesn't seem to solve the problems. I mean, you get the TV replays, but you seem to have a continuing issue of whether it was right or wrong. It doesn't necessarily solve the problems, but then again, you can say you should look to technology as much as you can.
Yeah, I think they're looking to, they will be using it, I think, as like on a trial basis in some of the Copa del Rey games over the next month or so. So maybe we'll see some progression there if something in particular, hopefully nothing goes amiss, because as Tim said, I mean, you need to be in a league where referees are as lambasted as they are in La Liga for making mistakes, you know, week in, week out, and often as well. I mean, different sections of the media are quite keen to press blame and attribute it to certain things. And really, you just need to give them as much help as they can get. Given that we see problems week in, week out, whether it be something like the ball going out of play for Barcelona, whether it be a goal ruled out when it was offside potentially, or if there was a push, or maybe if the referee thought he saw something that he didn't. There's no reason now, with how successful this has been in other countries, in other tournaments, why not at least trial it in La Liga? I fail to see what the downside would be. Obviously, it would cost a bit of money, so I don't know whether that maybe might put a bit of a spanner in the works. But aside from that, there's really no reason. I mean, it's been proven to maybe that there's some edges to be rounded off, and maybe the fact that it can sometimes take up to a minute to make a decision. I mean, it takes the sting out of the game a little. But when it comes down to mistakes being made in one of, you know, the biggest leagues in the world, and the amount of money that can be involved, and the high stakes that can be in play, it's crazy to not have it involved already.
Well, I'm going to tell you exactly why it doesn't work, Simon. and it's because, look, I've seen the good and the bad of it this season. When following a bit of Italian football, there was a thrilling finish to Lazio on their trip to Juventus last week, when a penalty was awarded in the 96th minute after it was initially deemed to be a fair challenge. And then there was a video review of it, and the penalty was given, and the last kick of the game was a Dybala missed penalty, and it was a thrilling finale. Great excitement. However, that would have been kind of killed slightly if a video review system had just shown, oh, the referee got it right, oh, game over, the last act of a game is a man looking at a TV screen, which is slightly disappointing. Also, this weekend, a number of decisions in Serie A that I saw when covering a bit of the action from Italy was referees not willing to make a call, allow a game to continue, and then go back and check. For instance, a ball coming in from across, the striker clearly shoves the defender in the back. His header, he gets onto it, but it goes wide. Referee should have given a free kick, because it's a clear free kick, but instead, happy to wait and see how the play plays out first of all. It just leads to referees not making decisions that they should just be making as part of their job. And once they start losing the ballsiness and the guts to make those decisions, that's when you're going to start running into problems, when you're reviewing every other little incident, every sending off, every single goal, every single... You just want a game to flow smoothly without it being intercut with replay after replay of small, innocuous decisions that maybe affected the flow of a game, you know, 45 seconds before it. And that's to me why it's... Sorry, I've got on my soapbox here slightly, sorry. And Tim, I do apologise for the rant. But that's why I don't like the idea of video review systems. I can see how it works, and goal line technology has been useful for sure. But I think once you go to the video review, you're just going that little bit too far. And then they need to add the time back on as well. Anyway, let's move away from Barcelona quickly, the last few minutes of the show today. A quick one on Atletico Madrid. And let's talk about, because you mentioned it earlier, Tim, their victory against Celta Vigo. And just briefly on this, Kevin Gamero, of course, with the goal after 28 minutes. Diego Simeone coming out and saying that he feels that this Celta Vigo result could be one that is important and turns the tide in Atletico's season, moves it in their favour, and they can start a march up the La Liga title. I mean, a win away at Celta Vigo is impressive. Is it all that impressive, though, gentlemen?
I found it entirely embarrassing how they played, to be perfectly honest. I think if you were looking at it, you would think that this was Atleti of a few years ago against one of the top teams in the division, when really they're going out and playing against a Celta Vigo side that have looked extremely ordinary defensively this season. And while, yes, they do have their qualities going forward, Maxi Gomez has scored a lot of goals, Sisto, Aspas, they're all dangerous players, I think they just gave Celta far too much respect. I think Oblak was essentially tied to his back four by an umbilical cord, and he was, every single time that he managed to get the ball under his control, whether it be claiming a cross or smothering a shot, he had to wait with every single kick or throw that he made to make sure that his back four were pushed out, because they were so deep. It was absolutely unbelievable. Griezmann was essentially an auxiliary central midfielder. It was asking a lot of him to trap back in as an extra central midfielder and then get up forward and be everything that's exciting about their attack. And then the winning goal came from just a scrappy finish from Gamero, which will do his confidence a world of good, and obviously it's 3 points, but the manner of it was just horrible to watch.
Yeah, I think that Simeone's comments were probably more designed to inspire his players rather than, you know, from what he saw on the pitch, because, you know, like Simon says, it was a poor, well, disappointing performance from them. I mean, they were missing Koke and his creativity in midfield, and Carrasco, to be fair, hasn't been playing that well either, was also injured. But they were just not producing the chances in attack. There's been sort of comments made about Griezmann, he's not at the same level as he was at last season. But at the same time, you can't put all your hope really on Griezmann. He's not going to be banging the goals in every single game. I mean, like you need to have other players around. And I think it's more of a problem in the creativity in midfield than the actual the goal scorers, because the chances haven't been there for them to take.
Interesting then for Atletico Madrid. It's almost embarrassing, as Simon said, though, if he is trying to inspire his players to come out and say this in the media. I mean, just say it behind closed doors. Just rile the players up behind closed doors, Diego. Don't start saying ludicrous comments like that a Celta Vigo on the road victory is going to inspire your side to greatness. Simon, I'm going to pass the soapbox over to you as well, because before we came on air, you wanted to talk about Athletic Club Bilbao losing to Leganés, the surprise package perhaps of the La Liga campaign so far, were it not for Valencia sat second place in La Liga. Leganés sat in fifth at the moment. Bilbao losing away from home against them, and you've been rather frustrated by Athletic Club.
Oh yeah, massively. I think Cuco Ziganda, when he was chosen in the summer, he was seen as, you know, the safe option with Valverde leaving for Barcelona, to go with someone that was more organic to come through, who knows the club. But all in all, he has shown absolutely no kind of tactical kind of nous compared to Valverde, and obviously it's a hard act to follow, but the performances all season have been extremely poor. Even before the injury to Iker Muniain, which was another, you know, misery compounded sort of situation, they just weren't playing well at all. He's not imposed any kind of style. They're not the only way that they're consistent is that they're consistently poor. And the fact that, for example, they haven't gone out and spent big on, say, Mikel Merino, who's doing fantastically well in the Premier League this season. They could have secured him even before he left Spain, even before he went to Borussia Dortmund. I mean, with the limited talent pool that they can call upon, given the Basconi policy, they have to be securing players like that, because now they're playing with Mikel Vesco in centre midfield with Mikel San Jose, and both of those were incredibly poor yesterday. There's no creativity. They go away to play Östersunds in the Europa League, and Athletic have been in the Europa League for the past four consecutive seasons, and it was hard to guess which was the new team in the competition. It was absolutely absurd. And while, you know, 3 points against Sevilla, you know, that could be seen to paint over the cracks, be seen something to build from. Sevilla have been arguably one of the worst teams in La Liga over the last few games, so it's almost as if they were just clambering over each other to try and grasp some kind of positive. So Leganés, very well organised, do what they do extremely well. They like to limit the opposition. They completely just asphyxiated the Athletic Club. It was a deserved defeat, and really, I just can't see what Ziganda offers other than taking Athletic backwards.
Well, brutally honest from Simon Harris. It feels like you've had an edge about you today, just wanting to stick the knife in a couple of teams. And I tell you what, with Bilbao kind of bleeding out from Simon's injuries there, we will leave it there for today on the show. Gents, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. Tim, pleasure to finally get you on the show. You can follow Tim on @ Catalan Dream on Twitter. @ Catalan Dream, all one word, that is. And a fine debut indeed. I'm sure we'll be pulling you back again from the depths of the basement at Marker, mate.
Hi, it's been a pleasure to be on board. Thanks very much.
And Simon, the brand Harrison, you can find on Twitter @ Simon H Football. @ Simon H Football. Always a pleasure, never a chore, my friend.
Yeah, yet again. I mean, we've maybe been a bit harsh this time. We'll find out from the fallout, I suppose. But yeah, a pleasure to be on as always.
It gets bad to worse for Bilbao as they take on Barcelona next weekend. Atletico take on Villarreal, Sevilla, Leganés and Alaves, Valencia in reverse order. Your evening to afternoon fixtures on Saturday next weekend in La Liga. Getafe take on Real Sociedad to start Sunday. Girona, the new boys, take on Real Madrid. Eibar, Levante, and then Malaga against Celta Vigo, wrapping up the Sunday action. This evening, Real Sociedad take on Espanyol, Deportivo La Coruña take on Girona. We won't be able to touch on those games, of course. We are recording this on the Monday morning, so it's ready and available for you Monday afternoon, Tuesday, and throughout the week until the build-up for the rest of the games next weekend. And until next week here on Isle of Liga, remember to stay tuned to the podcast. Get on to atmarker.com/en, atmarker.com/en, @MarkerInEnglish on Twitter, @MarkerInEnglish on Twitter, and of course on Facebook, just type in Marker in English. You'll be able to like and follow the Facebook page, get all of the updating news and late and breaking discussion points and news from Marker in English on all three of those outlets, and of course on Audio Boom and iTunes. Type in Eye on La Liga and like and rate and review the podcast if you will. We'll be back in about 7 days' time or so. Until then, take care, enjoy the football, have a good one.